I'd like to call the meeting to order for the Environment Policy and Oversight Committee for February 12th. And first thing we need to do is to approve the minutes for February 10th. And Representative Falk, would you like to... Representative Falk moves the minutes February 10th be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and minutes are approved. Well, today should be a rather quick hearing. We're going to be covering a couple of bills. First of all, Representative Hansen, House File 591, the Bowser bill, if you'd like to move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 591 to pass and be recommended to
be referred to the General Register.
To be referred to the General Register.
Okay, Representative Hansen moves House File 591 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And I understand that you have an amendment as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 591 is the Board of Water and Soil Resources technical bill. And I do have the A1 amendment, which does make a couple changes. There were a couple items in 591 as written that were a little more policy than technical, so we're removing those. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment to get it in the form and shape that the office would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen to the bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The bill in front of us as amended makes some technical changes. It really replaces some terms and language that is somewhat dated and redundant. For example, it's still Minnesota statute in this bill still referred to the Soil Conservation Service, which I think has been NRCS since 1993. So that's somewhat of the type of language changes that are in here. It's referring to some old dates that are no longer relevant, and it has some repealers in there. I do have the Executive Director of the Board of Water Soil Resources, John Jaschke, here to walk through the bill.
Welcome, Director Jaschke. State your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, John Jaschke, Executive Director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. As Representative Hansen said, this is a bill that really is trying to clean up and update the statute that authorized the reinvestment of soil program back in the mid-1980s. Since then, we've been able to operate, actually just fine. We've been with this outdated statute because of the appropriation language that we've has been modified each year to direct how the program would, you know, do certain things that may have been otherwise not consistent with the statute. So we felt it was time to get it cleaned up and not have to rely on that statute or that appropriation language each year to try and do that. I'll just walk through this, you know, kind of piece by piece, and it shouldn't take a long period of time. But the first changes you see are under the purpose and policy. Again, the language here is really to reflect the wide variety of circumstances that the RIM program, Revest Minnesota program, targets for land retirement. And again, the primary things the program does is restore wetlands and adjacent uplands, and then also reestablish riparian buffers along water courses, streams, lakes, and rivers. And we can see that there's some additional identification of the benefits that land retirement in those sensitive marginal areas provide, including, you know, the issues that have been identified in recent years of flooding, carbon sequestration, native plant communities, et cetera. The bottom of, on line 2.12, this is a citation that refers to the mid-1980 period when that date of December 23rd, 1985 was established, and it's known as the Swamp Buster provision, which was first adopted in the USDA's Federal Farm Bill. And it's that date thereafter, producers who were enrolled in that program were not allowed to drain wetlands in most cases without putting at risk their Federal Farm Program benefits. And this provision really is no longer relevant or needed. On to line 2.17, Just reinstating the fact that the title of the program is Reinvest Minnesota Reserve Program, and that's just a citation being brought forward from another section. Line 2.21, we talk about the definition of riparian land, and riparian land is a very broad definition, of course. Being adjacent to water is the generic meaning of that. And here we previously had this language that identified a specific kind of plan where you would define this particular category, and it isn't necessary because there's many plans that would use that same terminology. On page 2.24 and 2.30, you can see that actually the program was, and it was originally created back in the mid-80s, was called the Conservation Reserve Program, and subsequent to that, the federal government actually created its own Conservation Reserve Program, CRP, as everyone knows. And so there's been some confusion in recent years because you read the statute and it says CRP, and you understand that the U.S. Department of Agriculture runs a CRP program, which was created afterwards. And so just cleaning this up to make sure that we don't confuse the two, because they have some connections, potentially, but not necessary in statute. And then I'll also point out on line 2.28, we are always looking at the enhancement of these sites for these functions. We do not use the program to just preserve what's there. They're always used to enhance a site by restoring a wetland or installing a riparian buffer. On to line 3.8. Just adding that we use a variety of water quality improvement practices in association with these sites, making sure that the lands that are associated with the conservation easement area have sound practices on them. Line 3.17, just noting that land that may be in pasture, it's not only sensitive if it's on a hillside, but it may be sensitive if it's in a wetland or some other sinkhole area or some such thing. So just being a little bit more flexible about what kinds of lands are eligible. And then, as Representative Hansen noted on line 3.22, just taking out the definition that's defined by an organization that's no longer with that name. Again, the title change there in 3.25. And then on line 3.30, making sure that we encompass other potentially environmentally sensitive areas that maybe weren't as commonly known back in the mid-1980s, and I use that example of groundwater protection sites that are maybe in a wellhead area or in the southeastern part of the state, some of those karst topography where we have to keep surface water from getting into the groundwater. Lines 3.32 and 3.33, just removing outdated language, which of course refers to a cropping history that is, practically ancient at this point in time. On to page 4.6. These are the kinds of rights that are acquired. And we certainly have quite a bit of flexibility because each of these easements is associated with a management plan that is identified for each of those and filed along with the easement that describes the conservation practices and activities that need to occur on that land. These types of activities are generally prohibited. However, livestock grazing actually in some cases could be allowed if it was not going to compromise the water quality or habitat benefits of that site. In fact, it might be an alternative to burning in some cases. We're trying to find landowners. We've got a couple that have expressed interest in a rotational grazing approach, which would sort of mimic what we might do with fire. We have to make sure we, have that very carefully laid out so that we don't compromise those primary functions of habitat and water quality. On the line 4.12, it says that, we ought to not be doing spraying or chemical or mowing, but there's also reasons to do that for the conservation purposes we talked about. So we don't want to have a flat-out prohibition. We want to make sure that those things are done in concert with the goals of the program and the management plan for that site. I think the rest of it is just reflecting the title. And then getting on to page 5.6, this is where you see the most changes, and this is the one that is probably in some ways the most outdated and probably ought not have been in statute in the first place, but here it is. It defines a whole list of very prescriptive payment rates, which have dollar amounts, which were put in here in the 1990s and, of course, no longer have a correlation with today's market conditions. So we've always had the provision to, basically come up with an alternative payment structure, but leaving us in here didn't make any sense, so we are being much more explicit about the way our board, with input from many others, establishes the payment rates based on market factors. The principal one we use is, this, as described here, the township average estimated market value of property that the Commissioner of Revenue establishes, and we have those records that are actually managed by the University of Minnesota on a website that any landowner or any organization could go in and look up these numbers, you know, for their very own property or property that they're interested in. And then again, on the top of page 6, line 6.1, this actually is coming out, so that's out via the amendments that the author has just accomplished. On to line 6.7, 6.8, just again identifying the process that we changed above, now being part of the board's discretion and not looking back at those explicit payment rates. On the bottom, I'm sorry, on 6.16 to 6.19, again deleting the one organization that was part of USDA and making the reference to the U.S. Department of Agriculture complete, because they have two organizations that are often involved with this program, the Farm Service Agency and the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and obviously cooperating with Soil and Water Conservation District and Watershed District has always been an ongoing matter. We want to make sure they were listed here in the statute as well. And then on to line 6.23 to 6.27. This is a underutilized, if ever utilized, provision, but it says that the board may supplement payments under federal programs. We haven't made payments, you know, sort of cash payments or incentive payments without some property interest in that site. I don't expect that we would, but either way, the funding source that would potentially go in that, go towards this, the application of this provision would describe what you could or couldn't do with it, including the way the bond authorities describe what can and can't be done with that money. It has to have, of course, a capital investment interest in the site, and so we would never be able to use bond proceeds for this, but there could be other appropriations from other sources that we might need to use, but at this point we have no plans for that. And then at the bottom of the 6.26, those are programs that are just lists, and one of which, of course, no longer exists anymore, the water bank program, so just leaving it more generic to any program that we can partner with. On 6.29 through 6.32, being clear that, you know, food plots, which are allowed under these conservation easements, can be included as part of a description that's in that management plan for that site. Food plots of various sorts for wildlife habitat benefits. On the top of page 7 at 7.3 and 7.5, one thing you'll see down here in the repeater that we're repealing rules that were developed back in, you know, the early 1990s that really no longer have any value, because the statute basically guides everything as well as the appropriation language. And so, to be honest, we haven't needed these rules. We have no need for the rules, and we'd rather have them be off the books so we don't have to worry about being in conflict with those when the statute is the driver as well as the appropriation language. Our board also has the authority to adopt policy, which is listed elsewhere in statute, and we're just making it explicit here that we can do that same approach for the Reinvest in Minnesota program. And then finally, on line 7.7 through 7.10, this date is really the issue that's being taken care of there, because we have the authority to release, although it's been very, very seldomly exercised and only for very extenuating circumstances where a portion of a site is released. And the way that works is, if it is released, if one of two things happens, either the landowner is required to enroll another piece basically in trade to keep it the way it was, or they are required to pay back with interest the amount they receive from the state for that purpose. And again, it's been, we get maybe one of these every couple of years, and they're for very small portions, you know, half acre of a 50 acre site or something like that. So I think that's the majority of it. The repealer, again, takes care of removing the rule. And the other repealers, just remind us what those do. The first repealer for 103F 5.511, subdivision 4, just is taking care of that definitional problem with CRP. And the second repeal of there, 103F.521, is repealing the details of this technical assistance, which was sort of mandated that the state help the local authorities carry this out. That obviously is something that is required as part of running the program, but the details of that really aren't relevant any longer. So those two pieces are repealed. With that, Mr. Chairman, members, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director Jaski. Any questions for the director, for Representative Hansen? Representative Lagunias.
Yes, I'm looking on page 4.13, where you are where it says except as necessary to comply with noxious weed control, and then we've added this new line. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm obviously going to do a restoration, and we're going to need to do some spraying, but what is a noxious weed under this step? What's the definition of noxious weed here?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lagunias, is probably the best example I could use is Canadian thistle or bull thistle. And I've had to do this on property where you have CRP, and as a landowner, not RIM, but CRP, you have wet responsibility to go and mow that thistle or spray that thistle because it's considered a noxious weed.
Well, what I was looking at is reed canary grass considered a noxious weed, so can be sprayed under this definition?
Madam Chair, I don't believe it's considered a noxious weed. It's considered an invasive species that's undesirable. What this would do is it would allow for that, because without the other language, we would have no description of the management goal of the site would be to get rid of invasive as well as noxious weed, and this would allow that to be accomplished under this provision. So the board could provide for that as a management tool on that site.
It's not exactly the way I'm reading it, and that's why I was stumbling here. Or for emergency control as pest to protect the public health, or as approved by the board. I look at that as approved by the board to be controlling for pests. So now where do I get to control for reed canary grass?
Madam Chair and Mrs. Chair and Representative Wiginius, maybe it isn't constructed correctly, but if it is, the pure goal here was to allow for the spraying with chemicals to control things that were other than those that are listed, which, was limited to those things, noxious weeds and pests. We wanted to be able to add some authority to do what you were describing, which to go after invasive.
Representative Lagunias.
Yeah, I don't think this is crystal clear. And, I think we're after the same thing here. We're not after different things from what I hear from you. Would it be better, and I'm just asking this, as necessary to comply with noxious weed control laws, comma, control invasive species, comma, and then go on, I'm stumbling on this one, because you're controlling for noxious weeds, and it's not or. I'm thinking it needs to be or there. I'm not trying to actually give you more authority for spraying, and this just seems so counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Representative Hansen?
Maybe we could have council take a look at that again.
Taylor? Members, why not maybe to use colons and semicolons just to kind of clarify that there's different clauses?
You said you'd be suggesting a semicolon where the or is?
Perhaps on line 4.12 after except inserting a colon, and then on line 4.13 instead of inserting a comma for, insert a semicolon for, and then the same thing on line 4.14.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would move that amendment if people are comfortable with it.
Okay, Representative Vargenius moves to amend the bill of File 591 on page 4, line 4.12, place a semicolon after except, line 4.13, place a semicolon after the word laws, and line 4.14, semicolon after the word help. Is that correct?
I'm just going to ask counsel if I could a question. Would it be a colon?
It'd be a colon.
After mowing. Is that...
Oh, after mowing.
I said after except.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, it, yep. It
okay.
Colon after except.
Okay. So as was originally stated, does everybody understand the motion? Any discussion to it?
I support it.
Representative Hansen supports it. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Vargenius renews her motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. So, and President Junkie, you had a question?
Yep. Just a question on page 3. By the way, a weed is any plant out of place, growing out of place. So
that's the official definition of a weed. That's from my chemical weed control class back in agronomy. Page 3.4, 3.5, what's your definition of marginal land? I know it's not part of your changes here. How do you define marginal land? Which is what's gotten us into trouble over the years on these set-aside programs is that, everyone's got, it depends on the area of the state you're at, and, is there a production criteria less than a certain average of production in the region, or is it, a topography criteria, or is it soil type criteria, or topsoil depth criteria, or I can go on, but I won't. What is your definition of that? And is that something that you've reviewed in recent years and are able to work with?
Director Jaskey?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, that definition is in an earlier part of this statute, 103F.511, marginal agricultural land. I'll just read it. I happen to bring it along here, and I think it's the current version. That means the land that is, number one, composed of classes 3E, 4E, 5, 6, 7, and 8 land identified in the land capability classification of the USDA, or similar land described under Clause 1 that's established by the board. So it's using the USDA classification system, and then there is a little bit of flexibility if land in a particular site hasn't been classed appropriately because it's a very small area, for example, that we could allow that to be described by the board.
So it sounds like there's quite a bit of different criteria that's used in the federal law.
For now.
Any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Jaskey or Representative Hansen, my questions are in regards to the food plot issue. Director Jaskey, don't you sometimes do, or Representative Hansen, don't we sometimes do these in conjunction with WRPs?
Yeah. Representative McNamara, the Reinvestment Minnesota program has been a partnership of several federal programs, WRP being the most recent one. And that program is a 30-year federal conservation easement that is applied, and the state takes a perpetual easement on top of that. And I think what you're probably alluding to is that the WRP program, federal program, has some limitations on what kinds of activities related to food plots can occur on those areas that they've enrolled. And so if it was a site that had both provisions applying to it, you would have to follow both of those provisions. If you, at this case, you get WRP, you would, in this case, get 30 years, and then after that, you'd be able to utilize this provision, unless, of course, the USDA were to change their policy in the meantime.
That's a nightmare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Jaffke, so you actually may not be able to authorize it under certain situations, is what this is saying. There may be an opportunity to have them, and if Minnesota's policy for WRP is different than other states, then here we would not be able to do that potentially.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's true, that if you are subject to a federal standard, you have to follow that as well. I think what this is saying is the state's policy is that food plots would be allowed, you know, if they benefit the wildlife habitat for that site.
And an unrelated question, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I was just curious. I don't serve on the ag committees, but I'm just surprised. There is a lot of reference about ag in here. It's not going to either one of the ag committees. It's just going to the floor.
Representative Harry, Representative McNamara, the jurisdiction for the Board of Water and Soil Resources is in the environment, environmental finance chain. So that's where the Board of Water and Soil Resources is a separate agency from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So the chain here is the biology chain through the environmental. Yeah. And we have a lot of, I mean, around the table, there are a lot of folks representing ag areas, and I think we've had some of the questions that I think are there relating to agriculture.
Okay. So, we have Andrew. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen and Director Jaskowski, actually, maybe this would be directed at Mr. Jaskowski. 2.1 through 2.8, it looks like there's an expansion, if you will, of the mission dealing with expansion to include roles to support native plant habitats, looking at roles that support sequestration of carbon. I guess two questions related to that. The first is what brought forth the addition of those changes? What's the reason for adding them? And secondly, how will the addition of those affect the ability of your agency to continue to focus on the things that are fundamental to protecting soil and water through your partners with the Soil and Water District?
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Jaskowski, I think a number of these you see that we have, Mr. Jaskowski noted last year and the year before. In legislation, we've added a number of these components in through either appropriations language or other policy language. So this is kind of bringing this section of law into similar language as what we've done in the last couple of years. Particularly, I think the experience in your area with the flood damage and the work that the districts and the board and our federal partners have done responding to the flood reaction and trying to also prepare and prevent damage from future flooding. I think that's one of the reasons that the legislature really had, I think, a good reaction to the flood damage, and there was that soil conservation component that was in there, and you're seeing that appear as part of the language. Mr. Jaskowski.
Director Jaskowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jaskowski, I think, you know, what this reflects is what Representative Hansen said about legislation that's been passed previously that talk about these functions and benefits, but it's also based on, you know, scientific findings since the mid-80s when this statute was originally created that identify important functions that the program can achieve. And so the way we would carry this out is simply as we have been, which is to utilize these multiple benefits in our assessment of which are the most priority projects to fund first and let the local soil water district utilize these factors to make those decisions. So it's based on the science that's occurred over the last couple of decades.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jaskowski, so I don't know. My concern is it appears that there is, whether, you know, the cart is before the horse in the other proposals that were passed earlier dealing with appropriations. But my concern is we've got it's evident that there might be mission creep going on here, or at least certainly expansion of the roles of the collective organization. And you know, the flood-prone area work representative, many of the traditional roles, or I would maybe even submit most or maybe all of them, tied directly to the flood naturally, because the work that happened, for instance, in Garvin Brook Watershed in southeast Minnesota, and the exemplary work, I should say, of Bowser and the district in that area, were rooted directly in the normal goals and objectives of the organization, and we're a perfect fit for that. My concern is if we have the organization defined, and as I mentioned, it appears to me that we're creeping and developing new things for them to do and go out and plant native habitat plots for somebody's viewshed, or looking to sequester carbon as an objective of the organization, rather than focusing on the objectives of water and soil conservation, which is the root of the fundamental function of the organizations. That's my concern here. So I guess any comment you might have on that. I guess I'm interested where the language came from or the addition of those pieces.
Mr.
Jaskey.
These are all of these functions were identified in the policy that established the Wetland Conservation Act, you know, a decade and a half ago, and certainly the protection of wetlands that that law prescribed would apply to, you know, restoring of wetlands, I think, just as well, maybe more so. And again, these are, you know, whether you think they're all the right ones or not, I guess is, you know, your decision, but these are the ones that have been commonly acknowledged are the outcomes and benefits that we in our soil and water district utilize to pick the projects that have been, you know, chosen to be the first priorities. And do they pick all of these first? No, but they, depending on the site, as Representative Hansen noted, some cases we emphasize flood control, sometimes we emphasize wildlife habitat, sometimes we emphasize, you know, water quality. It just depends on the site. But these are commonly recognized benefits, and I don't see it as a change in focus or mission or purpose. I think I just see it reflecting the common up-to-date scientific understanding of what these projects accomplish.
I think it falls well within my view, the basic functions that Bowser's to carry out. Representative Junkie, do you have?
On page 3, line 3.17, you list a whole number of 1 through 10 on... you could be one of those, that's where the marginal land question came from, or if you're riparian land, or if you're in a sensitive groundwater area, or the land used to say is on a hillside used for pasture, now it says just used for pasture. Again, that bothers me because the underlying land there, and you can develop pasture land fairly quickly with seeding of grasses and other things, but the underlying land may be level, good, you know, productive ag land, and now it's qualifying for RIM. So why did we do that? I understand the hill on there. Now you've got a topography question with the pasture, and that could probably be deemed marginal. But why are we just going to straight, flat pasture? That could be any productive farmland in the state.
Mr. President Junkie, good point, and maybe we, you know, need a little bit of work on making it more straightforward, but there's pasture lands that aren't on a hillside that could be in environmentally sensitive areas, and so...
But then, Mr. Chair, that's not what it says.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I understand, and so if you're interested in suggestions, I'm sure others might be as well.
I think something, Mr. Chair, again, coming off a Green Acres debate on, you know, what we're setting aside and what we're not and what we're allowing, you know, in government programs, this would have seemed to me a way that a person could get very normal, productive agriculture land into a RIM program. And I don't think that's the purpose of the program or what we want to spend our dollars on. So, you know, I don't know what, I don't think you should let it out of here uncorrected, Mr. Chair. Either, you know... land that is marginal in nature and used for pasture, or, you know, something that describes, you know, without a definition of marginal land, but the pasture is that's all over the board.
As far as an amendment, maybe just adding on to the end of pasture that is marginal or marginal in nature. I don't know if that would be an acceptable amendment.
Well, it would be if that works. I'm looking at our lawyer here to see if it does or not.
Would that fit in there okay?
It would.
Okay. And Representative Junkie or Representative Hansen?
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, I think that clarifying that is good. I'm visualizing in my mind, you know, you often have a pasture that's probably in a wet area, and you can actually see where that remnant plow furrow goes up to one point, and that's the end of where it was cropped. And you're saying on from that cropped land, that shouldn't be in there, but maybe from that furrow in. And so having some, not only the hillside, there probably can be some areas that should enroll, but to try to keep the productive farmland out. And I think clarifying that is a good way to do it. And if council thinks the language there is enough,
I'd move that amendment.
Okay, Representative Junkie moves that on page 3, line 3.17, after pasture, remove the period and add that is marginal.
Oh, remove the period.
Period.
And
Ms. Taylor.
What you'd want to do is after pasture, insert that as marginal.
Okay.
That is marginal in nature.
That is marginal in nature? Okay. Add that is marginal in nature. Everybody understand the amendment? Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Representative Junkie renews his motion. All those in
support it.
Yep, Representative Hansen supports it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. So, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on the questioning that Representative Drzkowski was following. In the area of sequestering carbon, would that preclude a controlled burning, for example, in a piece that qualified for this program? Because you're not sequestering carbon if you do a controlled burn.
Director Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, you know, I guess if you're talking about a snapshot moment, you know, when the burn occurs, but you've also got the carbon that has been sequestered when the land is retired by the soil, in the soil profile, and so you guess you've got to do an analysis to see how much was still in the soil and how much it was being released through the burn. And we don't get into that level of detail, at least we haven't.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Drzkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jaski, related to Representative Anderson's question, if someone is in a program, would it and they decide to implement some sort of management practice that actually liberates rather than sequesters carbon, would that knock them out of the program or preclude them from potentially being involved in a program? If they come in and if there's a tree stand or whatever that's half mature and they decide to cut it down and do something else with it, what are the ramifications for that in terms of how it will affect people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drzkowski, the activities that are allowed, you know, are described as we were discussing earlier, and those that aren't allowed are described. An activity like that, a practice to, improve the site would be part of a management plan that's defined for each site. And so if someone were to propose doing that, if that were to imbalance, improve all of these functions, it would be approved. So there wouldn't be any one thing that you would do that would necessarily say you you know, that activity couldn't occur. It would be on balance. All of these functions would be weighed, and the overall conclusion about it and being an improvement to the site or not would be made.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Hansen.
I renew my motion to approve House File 591 as amended and send it to the General Register.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 591 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Next, Representative Purcell. Welcome, Representative Purcell, if you'd like to move the bill.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 536.
Okay, Representative Purcell moves that House File 536 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And Representative Purcell to the bill.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief here and let Mr. Gaskey explain anything any further. this bill is designed to correct some language and give counties some options in procuring water implementation funds for their match. Their match for water implementation funds. I should say that the other way. And currently, they had to levy for that match, and this language, as corrected, would allow them to use any local funds for a match.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Purcell. And Director Jaskey, would you like to speak to it?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members, as Representative Purcell noted, it's a fairly straightforward proposal to allow counties who are required to put forth a match amount to get state funding under their local water management authorities some flexibility. And this came from a recommendation that the legislative auditor provided in our regular agency audit that occurred about a year and a half ago. And they suggested, and we followed through on the fact that we wanted to audit each of these local county programs to make sure that they were providing the match that's required by statute. What we did is we did a sample of the counties. We looked at eight of them, and of the eight, seven of them we found the actual amount that was being levied for the program, and so they were fully compliant with the law. We did identify one county, Itasca County it happened to be, where they were providing the match. However, they were deriving it from another fund other than the general levy. They were actually using a fund that was established from the proceeds of activities on their county-owned lands, which is a pure local revenue source, but it was not from a specific levy. Now, they probably could have done some things to do some shifts to make it look like that, but they chose to be real straightforward about it and do it that way. And so what we were recognizing is that this statute, which was created back again in 1989, prescribes the amount that a county needs to put forward as their contribution to the state grant program. Every county in the state has a local water management plan, and each of them have been getting this grant for about the last 15 or 20 years to do their local programs, to leverage other funding, et cetera. And the simple thing that this bill is asking to do is to allow them to use other local cash sources for their contribution to match that state grant. And that amount that they have to put forward is based on tax capacity or ability to pay. It's one of the few that is set up that way. And so the counties that have a low tax capacity generate a lower number, and those that have a tax capacity generate a higher number, and then they get a state grant that allows them to do their local water management responsibilities. So Mr. Chairman, members, that's what this provision would do, was allow for other sources, such as what Itasca County had done, to contribute to their match.
Okay, thank you, Director Jaffe. Any questions at all for Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, I'm just wondering, can you tell me what is this program and how long has it been around? What does it actually do? I'm just trying to understand, or Director Jaffe, whatever.
I'll tell you what I know about it from being on the Soil and Water Board in Bell County County, and the Soil and Water Board in Bell County County is in charge of a water plan developed for the county, and that's what they use the money for.
Director
McNamara, a few more details on that is that the county, every 5 to 10 years, adopts a water plan, and this is the portion that the county provides to get the state match, which is a foundation for many other state grant programs. And that plan connects the data, the science, and the citizens to the priorities that they want to do in their county for water management. It's shoreland, it's septic, it's the foundation for projects, it's the whole comprehensive responsibility the counties have under water management. This is a foundational piece of that.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Representative Purcell, I'd like to renew your motion.
Yeah, I renew the motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Purcell renews his motion that House File 536 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. And that's all we have on the agenda, so the meeting is adjourned.